Welcome to episode number 37 of the River City Hardball Podcast, presented by 925 Partners Insurance. If you need insurance, check those guys out, 925partners.com. I'm your host, Andrew Gibson, where we talk baseball here in Jacksonville at the high school, college, and professional level. And today we bring in somebody from Jacksonville, our friend Jessica Blaylock, from South Florida, to talk about the postseason bound Miami Marlins. For the first time since 2003, Miami is back in the playoffs. Jessica, how are you doing?
I am great. I love hearing you say the playoff-bound Miami Marlins, especially considering what an insane season this has been. It's wonderful to know that they are heading to the playoffs.
And you were with that team pitch for pitch during this shortened Major League Baseball season, the Marlins. What a storybook type of season it's been for Miami. I think I read that 18 Marlins players missed a month with COVID-19. The Marlins were stricken by the virus, and ultimately they come through that adversity, Jessica, and they make the playoffs for the first time in 17 years. What a story it is.
Well, and this really puts it into perspective. When the 18 players plus a couple of coaches tested positive early on in the season, that led to the Marlins, team president of baseball operations, Mike Hill, Don Mattingly, having to make over 100 roster moves throughout the course of the season. So to navigate what the Marlins have gone through and for it to lead to a playoff berth is really, it's hard to put into words what that accomplishment means to this team, knowing what they have had to go through to get where they are right now.
It's been such an odd season for everybody. I mean, you haven't been able to be in the clubhouse. All the interviews have been on Zoom. What has that been like? I mean, the whole season's been odd, but, you know, to come through that and to know the Marlins are going to the playoffs, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the beginning of the year, it was bizarre, right? You know, going to a ballpark and it was completely empty because the team started the year on the road up in Philadelphia against the Phillies. So it was a little bizarre, I think, those first couple of games. But then when the team was at home, you had live baseball to watch on the field and you realized how lucky you were to be one of a handful of people who actually had the access to go into the ballpark and watch baseball in person. The time that it really struck me as being really, really unusual and so different than a normal season was the last game that the Marlins played against the Braves in Atlanta, our 40-minute rain delay. And they desperately needed that game. They desperately needed a win. Atlanta had taken the first three, and the Marlins were wanting to keep their playoff hopes alive. And all I could think to myself while I was sitting in an empty ballpark, because obviously they were at Truist Park, not at Marlins Park, all I could think was what an unbelievable atmosphere this would be right now, because the Braves had the opportunity, or maybe they had just clinched the night before. But I was thinking of all the different things that have been on the line in that series. In that series as a whole, Braves clinched the NL East. Marlins are fighting to keep their playoff hopes alive. And what the atmosphere would have been like with fans in the stands. And that was one of the first times really throughout the whole season that it just felt so sad to not be there. And then obviously when the Marlins clinched a playoff spot in New York Friday night by beating the Yankees, and all the guys are celebrating on the field, and you think to yourself, in a normal season, I would have been in that clubhouse, you know, getting the champagne poured all over your head, bouncing around from player to player, doing interviews on making it to the postseason. And so those were some of the times where it was definitely – you know, sad not to be there physically and be a part of it. But I think overall, I still come back to just being grateful that we had a season, grateful that we had games, and grateful to have been a part of covering this year, no matter what it looked like.
Jessica Blaylock with us from Fox Sports Florida, the Miami Marlins reporter. Jessica, you mentioned the Marlins clinching the playoff berth. They did so on the four-year anniversary of the death of Jose Fernandez, just an absolute superstar for the Marlins. Unfortunately, we lost him far too soon. What was that experience like? What was it like with the team? Obviously, I know you weren't in the clubhouse, as you mentioned, but, you know, what a coincidence that is for that event to happen on that date.
Yeah, and I think the people that it really impacted the most were Don Mattingly and Miguel Rojas, who, you know, Miggy was so close with Jose. Donnie loved Jose, still wears a bracelet to honor him. Mentioned that, you know, when he works out, he doesn't do 15 reps, he does 16 to honor Jose. And I think it was very, very emotional, especially for them, to clinch on the four-year anniversary of Jose's passing. And I got really emotional listening to Don Mattingly talk about what it meant and hearing the emotion in Miguel Rojas's voice as he did his post-game interview. And Paul Severino and Todd Hollinsworth up in our booth did the interview with Mattingly pretty much right away, right after the game ended, right after they had clinched, and asked him what's the first thing that he thought of. And he said, honestly, you know, Jose. And you could hear him get choked up, and it just kind of triggered all of those emotions and everything that we went through as a team 4 years ago. But so much of the team has changed since then, that really, you know, with Donnie and with Miguel Rojas, those are really the guys that you still, when listening to them talk about what it means, you feel the full impact because those guys were there and went through it. So, I mean, what a beautiful, tragic, still combination of so many emotions. That beautiful in the sense that they clinched on the four-year anniversary of his death. Tragic because you still look back on it and think about how preventable it was, obviously, and just the circumstances surrounding it. But it's just one of those storylines that sports provide that you can't script it any more perfect, right? And so, yeah, it just a special night for so many reasons. But yeah, just kind of crazy thinking about it being the four-year anniversary, the same night that the Marlins clinched a playoff spot.
And yeah, it's, I still can't believe it's been 4 years since that happened. And I remember, and I know you do as well, I remember right where I was. We were getting ready to do a Jaguars game on a Sunday morning, and I had found out, you know, late the night before a boating accident happened, and still can't believe that it took Jose Fernandez. And you were around the team back then. You covered Jose. What was he like to cover as a player? I mean, the guy was bursting onto the scene at that point, and he was an ace. I mean, he was.
Yeah, I mean, generational talent, right? You know, this guy would have been a future multiple Cy Young Award winner, future Hall of Famer. I mean, just the kind of guy that you got so excited. And I think we're seeing a scratching the surface of it with Sixto Sanchez. You get excited to watch Sixto pitch the same way that you got excited to watch Jose pitch. Sixto obviously still an unproven talent, right? We only have a small sample size to compare him, but you can't really put into words what it was like watching him. It was so electric, and the emotion that he pitched with, and the way that he loved the game, and the way that he made people around him love the game. And you know, obviously, like I said, it's a tragedy what happened, and a tragedy in more ways than one. But that will never take away from the way Jose played the game and the genuine love he had for everyone at the ballpark. I mean, Jose treated the guy who came in and cleaned up after the game the same way he treated his teammates. He was just excited to have everyone there. I still can't go back and watch videos of him pitching games. You know, they replay games on occasion. I've tried and I lose it within like a few minutes. So hopefully one of these days I'll be able to go back and watch and relive it and remember how magical it was to see him on the mound. But it was special. I mean, it was special. It's really the only way to describe it.
How would he have reacted to knowing that the Marlins clinched the playoff berth?
He would have, first off, he would have been the loudest one in the dugout. He would have been watching like a kid. You know, he would have been pounding on things and jumping up and down and hugging guys as soon as they came in after a good at bat or scoring a run. He would have been the first one running onto the field. He would have found the Gatorade, you know, containers and started pouring it on everyone. And he would have been having the most fun of anyone out there, because he always did. I mean, it even makes me, you know, it makes me emotional still to think about what he would have been like, but it would have been fun. It would have been fun to watch how he would have reacted.
I promise I'm not trying to make you cry, but it
I
does.
Know, I wasn't, Gibby, I wasn't expecting tears. I thought we were going to talk about, you know, Cubs versus Marlins in the playoffs and all that. I didn't know I was going to tear up on this one, but that's okay. It just, it shows the impact that he still has to this day on people who knew him.
Yeah, it just shows you the raw emotion that it is involved with who he was and, you know, what he could have been for sure. Well, let's go to a much lighter note. The Cubs and the Marlins play tomorrow at 2:08 Eastern time. And I say a lighter note because I think, and I've heard that you have a bet with our friend Beef from the morning show on 1010XL The Drill. Tell us about the bet with Beef.
Yeah, so of course, as soon as we saw that the matchup was Cubs-Marlins, I got a text message from Beef. I think that said, my, how the tables have turned. And so we just, of course, started going back and forth. And so this morning I texted him and I'm like, come on, we got to make some type of bet. And so I said, if the Cubs win, I will write a monologue and I will come on 1010XL telling everyone how great you are. And if the Marlins win, you have to do the same for me. So we have this little bet going on, and I texted Frank to let him in on it. And he said, well, I'm going to be pulling even harder for the Marlins now. So I'm really, really hoping not only for the Marlins to advance because they're the team I cover and I feel like these guys deserve it, but I just really want to listen to Beef talk about how amazing I am. I don't think that's too much to ask for, right?
I think everybody, our listeners would love that on 1010XL. That's a terrific idea. I love the idea, the thought behind that. You know, when I first saw that the Marlins were going to play the Cubs, the first thing that popped into my mind was, this is the Bartman series.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people thought. There's going to be no Steve Bartman in the Wrigley this time around. But I like the matchup. I think of the potential matchups that looked most realistic for the Marlins, it looked like they had a chance to either be the 5 or 6 seed. And if they had been the 5 seed, they would have paired up with the San Diego Padres. If they'd been the 6 seed, like they are, they get the Cubs. And just looking at those two matchups, I always felt like the Cubs were much more of a favorable matchup for them, because we know that the strength for the Marlins lies in pitching. They can be a little streaky offensively. There's been some ebbs and flow when it comes to offense throughout the course of these 60 games. And at the end of the day, the Marlins are probably not going to outslug a team, right? But they can outpitch them. And so I like the way that the Marlins line up with the Cubs, because the Cubs are a team that's struggled offensively this season too. I think they have underperformed where a lot of people thought that they would be. And there are some guys who have had some rough, rough years offensively that you would not normally think would struggle for the Cubs. So I think the Cubs is really a favorable matchup for the Marlins. And I would not at all be surprised if the Marlins get past the Cubs and advance.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned the strength of the Marlins is pitching. Well, that's what you need in the playoffs. I mean, most every team these days is going to hit the ball. They're going to hit home runs. That's just the way the game has gone to. But when you get to the postseason, when, you know, everybody's on edge, pitching is where it matters in the postseason.
I completely agree. The only team that I would say you could probably make the exception for are the Atlanta Braves.
Yes.
The Braves offense is so beyond absurd that I think the Braves, even with mediocre pitching, can go deep, because you got to face to lead off Ronald Acuna. If you get through Acuna, then you got to face Freddie Freeman, who I personally 100% think should be the NL MVP this season. And then if you get through Freddie, you got to face Marcell Ozuna, who was just named the NL Player of the Week. And then if you get through Marcell, you got to face Travis d'Arnaud, who's having a career year. And not a lot of people realize he is top five in the NL, I think maybe even in Major League Baseball in average, right behind Freddie Freeman. And, oh, by the way, we haven't even gotten to Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson, Adam Duvall. I mean, their lineup from top to bottom is so unbelievably stacked, and their bullpen is good. So I think the Braves are the one team that you could actually make the argument they don't need strong starting pitching to be a successful postseason team.
Yeah, and the Braves have a very young rotation. You know, I grew up as a Braves fan, still obviously pull for them, so I definitely know what you're talking about with the offense. It's the best offense that I've ever seen. I mean, I've been watching them for 20-something years, and I've never seen. The only offense I can really compare it to was, I believe, the 2003 Braves. I put up a bunch of numbers. That was Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones, Javi Lopez. Right. That was Gary Sheffield was part of that team, and they just – nobody hit the ball back then the way they do now with home runs. But that team was pretty similar to that. But, you know, some of the guys you just mentioned, Marcell Ozuna played for the Marlins for several years there. I didn't know what to expect. He was, you know, they signed him late in the process of free agency. And I'm like, well, we'll see what we have. He's been amazing.
He's been so good.
Ridiculous.
I think he leads the National League in home runs, if I'm not mistaken.
He's like a triple crown. He was like a triple crown candidate, him and Freddie Freeman on the same team.
Good for him. I always loved Marcell. He was one of the guys that wanted to stick around in Miami, but unfortunately moves had to be made. You know, they traded him to St. Louis. They got Sandy Alcantara out of it. And Sandy is now obviously a cornerstone of the Marlins starting rotation. And Marcell obviously eventually moved on from St. Louis. So the Marlins did get the better end of that deal and got some other pieces along with it. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does after this season. But I'm very happy for him. He was always a great guy to work with. And I still love seeing him.
The Braves can't let him get away. I mean, what he's done this year, they have to figure something out.
Yeah, he's been a valuable piece.
Yeah, I think the National League – and tell me if you agree – I think the National League's going to stick with the DH. I don't think you're going to see pitchers come back.
I think so, too. I think of all of these temporary rule changes for this crazy 2020 season, the universal DH is the one that is going to stick around. And I think a lot of people like me who originally said, you know what, I'm good with a universal DH this season, but I love the strategy in the National League with having your pitcher hit. I am letting go of that idea, and I am good with a universal DH because you see now how valuable it really is at the bottom of the order to have that extra bat. You know, Miguel Rojas, who you could easily argue has been the MVP for the Marlins, has driven in so many runs from being in the nine hole. And, you know, I'm like, I don't know if I ever need to see another pitcher swing the bat. I know that's going to bum out a couple of guys. I know Pablo Lopez in particular loves swinging the bat. Caleb Smith, who we traded to the Diamondbacks this season for Starling Marte, loves swinging the bat. There's going to be some pitchers who are pretty bummed out about it, but I think overall, I'm good with the universal DH.
Yeah, I think that's the better decision for baseball, to put the DH in there. It's more offense. I think it prolongs guys' careers.
Absolutely. It's going to create some jobs for some guys who maybe it was almost time to hang it up, but you're going to see them get jobs if there's a DH in the National League.
I mean, the DH perfectly fits Marcelo Ozuna. He's a great hitter. He sometimes is not the best fielder, but I mean, slot him into the DH and he's just fine right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And his defensive skills ever since the shoulder issues have, like you mentioned, kind of dropped off a little bit. But I mean, yeah, if you ask the Braves, after Freddie Freeman, maybe, who has been one of their offensive MVPs, you could easily say a guy like Marcelo Ozuna, easily.
Well, and if you're, you know, if you told Braves fan at the beginning of March, whenever, Ronald Acuna is going to miss a lot of time. Ozzie Albies is going to miss time. Where are they going to be? They're going to lose their entire rotation. I mean, that was right. Ridiculous this year, what they lost in starting pitching. Mike Soroka went down for the year, just an awful.
I was devastated, even covering the Marlins. I was watching that game, and I was devastated when I saw Mike Soroka go down, because you could immediately tell it was a bad injury. It was not good, whatever happened. And, you know, you hate to see a talented young guy like that who was going to be such a key piece for their rotation go down, and then obviously a little bit of a scare with Max Fried towards the end of the year, but it looks like he's going to be fine. So that's good. And Ian Anderson for them, he's been great. So we'll see.
Yeah. There's a lot of young talent certainly. And that was talked about for so many years. The Braves are so stacked in the minor leagues with pitching, and now you're starting to see, okay, they were pretty stacked. We've talked about the strength of the Marlins being the pitching this year. You know, for people that haven't watched the Marlins, I don't know how they got here. How did they get to where they are? I mean, they're in the playoffs for the first time in 17 years. How did they get to where they are?
Yeah, it's kind of been a combination of a couple of different elements, I think. But one of the biggest things, like we've talked about, starting rotation, Sandy Alcantara has just continued to grow and blossom and really take ownership of that ace role in the starting staff. Pablo Lopez really turned a corner this year, especially being able to effectively use his changeup. And he's tied for seventh place in Major League Baseball for lowest ERA. Just to put that in perspective, that's better than guys like Max Scherzer, Aaron Nola, Garrett Cole. I mean, once you start getting into the same category or better than guys like that, you know you're throwing the ball well. Even guys that were called in when the Marlins had all of their injuries, those guys stepped up and made sure that there wasn't too much of a drop-off when the Marlins lost Miguel Rojas and Harold Ramirez and Garrett Cooper and, you know, guys like that from their lineup for several weeks. It was a guy like Brian Anderson getting hot in the month of September and, you know, batting, I think it was over 350 in the month of September. It was playing well against the division, which was a huge difference this season versus last season. They had a winning record last season, the only NL East team they had a winning record against last season was the Phillies. This year in the NL East, they had a winning record against the Phillies, against the Nationals, against the Mets. They had a sub-500 record against the Braves, but it wasn't nearly as bad as it has been in past years. And I know there's obviously a lot less games, but that's a big thing, right? Especially playing so many games against your own division this year. You had to play well against teams in your division. The bullpen guys have stepped up. James Hoyt has been a stud out of the bullpen. So is Yimi Garcia, who has a sub-1 ERA out of the pen. Brandon Kinsler, Josh Hader leads the league or leads the National League in saves with 13. Brandon Kinsler has 12. So, you know, there's so many different guys who have stepped up. Jesus Aguilar, you know, Jesus having a season that looks much more like 2018 when he was an all-star. You know, so it's been a combination of things. You can't say, oh, well, this one guy led the team in this category and this one guy led the team. You could really go around and on any given night, it was a different guy stepping up. And I think a lot of credit too goes to Don Mattingly and the way that he managed through a lot of chaos, right? Like I mentioned earlier, a lot of roster moves, a lot of chaos, a lot of moving parts. So it's really, it's been a combination of factors that have gotten them to where they are.
I can't think of another year where the National League manager of the year is more obvious than it is.
Oh,
this year.
I completely agree. I think Don Mattingly is an automatic. And I know a lot of people have said, you know, Jace Tingler out in San Diego, and he has done a tremendous job. But the one thing I would say is, you know, the Padres have a Fernando Tatis Jr. They have a Manny Machado. They have an Eric Hosmer. They have, you know, they have superstars. They haven't had to make 100-plus roster moves throughout the course of a 60-game season. So I do think Jace Tingler has done a tremendous job. I think David Ross has done a great job with the Cubs for being a first-year manager. So I definitely think that there are other guys who have done a great job, but I think nobody has had to manage through what Don Mattingly has had to manage through. And I think that's what makes him the obvious candidate.
Yeah, and I would say to the people that say the Padres manager, Jace Tingler, deserves it, look, take no credit away from him. He did a great job this year. But also take a look at the payroll that the Padres
right.
have and what the Marlins have. I mean, they're paying Manny Machado $1 billion.
Exactly.
They're going to pay Tatis down the road. Hosmer, you mentioned.
I think Hosmer got a pretty sweet deal too with the Padres.
They just traded half their farm for Mike Clevinger. So they have they have guys the Marlins can't even dream about right now in terms of, you know, superstars already established. The Marlins have several guys that could be that down the road with time, but we're still waiting to see that. And that's what's also so exciting about the Marlins is that such a young team with so much promise going forward. But, I think what Don Mattingly has had to manage through, I mean, 18 of his guys missed a month with COVID. The Padres didn't have to deal with that. You know, they didn't have to make all the transactions the Marlins had to. So, yeah, he's a shoe-in for manager of the year, and he's been absolutely phenomenal, as you said. How far can they go, the Marlins?
I think they can go farther than people expect. I think a lot of people are counting them out. I think a lot of people are saying that they benefited from a 60-game schedule and that they're one of those teams that maybe wouldn't have been there otherwise. And, you know, oh, well, everyone makes the playoffs. You know what? Everyone doesn't make the playoffs. Because Jacob deGrom and the Mets are going to be watching the postseason from home. Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Didi Gregorius, Andrew McCutcheon, and the rest of the Phillies are going to be watching from home. You know, there's the defending World Series champions, Nationals, are going to be watching from home. I mean, there are a lot of teams that you could go through and say, yeah, they're going to be watching from home. Or, you know, Astros and Brewers, I know, both made it in with sub-500 records. The Marlins had their first winning record since 2009. So I think you can't discredit any team that has made it to the postseason, considering what every team has gone through this year. And I think that's what makes this postseason so much fun, because all bets are off. Anyone, I think, has a legitimate chance. I think the Marlins have a very, very, very real chance of getting through this wild card series against the Cubs. I think it obviously gets a lot tougher after that. And we'll have to see which teams advance. And I'm pretty sure the way the bracket is lined up, I'd have to double check if the Marlins beat the Cubs, they would face the winner of the Braves and the Reds.
I need to check on that too, but I think I'd have to check.
I mean, you look at all the other teams. If you have to face the Dodgers, obviously super difficult. The Reds have great pitching and an offense that has caught fire. That's a tough matchup. The Braves, we just spent so much time talking about how dangerous they are. The Padres, you know, they call it Slam Diego for a reason. So there's a lot of really, really good teams that are in the playoffs. And, you know, so I won't make any bold predictions and say, oh, I think the Marlins are going to win the World Series. I don't think it's impossible. I don't. I really don't. People may say I'm crazy, but I really don't think it's impossible. But I will say that I'm taking them to beat the Cubs in 3 games.
I love it. Few more minutes here with Jessica Blaylock, Fox Sports Florida, covering the Marlins. Postseason series you're most looking forward to watch?
I think hands down, Reds Braves. I mean, I am so intrigued by that matchup, especially with the way that both of those offenses are built. And to see the studs for the Reds rotation, like the Trevor Bowers and the Sonny Grays, and how they match up with the Braves offense. So I think to me that one is going to be incredible. I think that I think Dodgers Brewers, you know, no disrespect to Milwaukee, I'd be stunned if the Dodgers don't win it in 2.
Me too.
I'm going to take Padres over Cardinals. I'm going to take Marlins over Cubs, but Reds Braves is one of those series I wish we could see 5 to 7 games, because I just think it's going to be that good.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what the Reds threw out there with Bauer, Castillo, Sonny Gray. I mean, that's as good as 3 pitchers of a trio you'll face in the postseason in terms of that. And, you know, Trevor Bauer, who's going tomorrow against the Braves, opponent batting average this year, 155 off of Trevor Bauer.
I mean,
he's been unbelievable. Who wins the World Series? If it can't be the Marlins, then, you know, we'll see. But who do you think wins it?
I 100% think the Dodgers get there again. And I don't know if there is a team that can beat the Dodgers in 7 games. The Dodgers did not lose a single series this season. That is absurd. They were the first to 30 games, or the first to 30 wins, like way ahead of everyone else. And between their pitching, between their lineup, I said from the beginning of the year, I think when we talked, either right at the start of the season or right before, I thought Dodgers, Yankees. Now, after all the injuries to the Yankees and seeing kind of their flaws, I don't think it's going to be a Dodgers, Yankees World Series. I think it's going to be either Dodgers, White Sox, maybe, because I think the White Sox are way ahead of where people thought they would be. Or I will give credit to the Rays. The Rays are one of those teams who is not great in one particular area. They're just really good at everything. They've got a good rotation. They've got a good bullpen. And they've got a good lineup that knows how to win close ball games. And I think that's really important in the postseason. They have experience and they do well playing in pressure games, right? Like playing in close ball games. They find a way. They just find a way to win. I think they're a very, very complete team that is very solid in every facet of the game. But it's funny going through the Rays lineup, because it doesn't, when you hear the names, it doesn't knock your socks off, right?
Right.
You're like, oh, G-Man Choi, Yoshi Tsutsugo, Brandon Lau, Nate Lowe, Kevin Kiermaier, Willie Adames. Like, you go through it, and it's not necessarily any one player that is going to just, like, knock your socks off. But they're so good together. So I don't know. I'm gonna say either Dodgers White Sox or Dodgers Rays, but I think this is the year the Dodgers finally get over the hump.
It's been a long time since what, the 80s, since the Dodgers last won a World Series. So
They've been to the World Series what, like,
yeah,
3 years in a row now? Either 2 or 3 years in a row. Lost to the Red Sox, lost to the Astros. And you know, I think anything, it sounds crazy, but I think anything less than a World Series for the Dodgers, and they're completely disappointed in this season.
Agreed. And that's,
it's World Series or bust.
It is. And that's, you know, that's why they went out and got Mookie Betts. That's why they paid him all that money. Right. We got to, you know, get over the hump somehow in some way.
And he's been great.
He's been arguably the MVP. I mean, there's you know, Freddie Freeman certainly, I think, should be the MVP.
Because I get to see Freddie Freeman, obviously, a ton. And I think I've joked with you about this before. I probably have, like, an unhealthy obsession with Freddie for the fact that he plays for an opponent in the division that I cover. But I think Freddie Freeman is the most underrated player in Major League Baseball. The guy does everything. Everything. He is so – if I am playing in a Game 7 – and I have a game on the line, and I have one guy left that's going to go to the plate to try winning ball game for me, I'm taking Freddie Freeman. I know people are probably like, you're crazy. I'd go Mike Trout every day, all day. Maybe there's a couple other guys. Freddie Freeman, to me, is just so good. Just so, so good. And maybe it's because I've seen him do it multiple times. Yeah. Like Marlins especially. But the guy just delivers.
Yeah, he's incredible. He really is. And I always just think, how the heck is this guy so underrated? I mean, he's a superstar. And you know what? Freddie Freeman's going to be playing in the playoffs. Mike Trout's going to be watching again. And that's not Mike Trout's fault entirely.
Right.
But his team's going to be watching again.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching MLB Central this morning, and they were going through, you know, biggest disappointments, teams that were the biggest disappointment this season. And for the National League, they pointed out, you know, the Phillies. And obviously with that lineup and with going out and getting Zach Wheeler, who was great, you know, their bullpen was just their Achilles heel all season long. But for the American League, one of the teams they pointed out was the Angels. And you can't blame Mike Trout. Mike Trout he lives up to the hype every season. But you went out and got Anthony Rendon, who I think is a great player, just a tremendous player. Another one of those guys that's super underrated, or at least was when he was playing for the Nationals. And they just, for some reason, still can't, you know, figure out the pitching side of it. So
yeah, they can't pitch. I mean, Otani got hurt, but they still, you know, you gotta have more than one guy, and they just they haven't figured that out. You know, so we'll see what happens with them. Last thing before I let you go, I really appreciate your time. As always, this podcast presented by 925 Partners Insurance in Jacksonville, River City Hardball. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. We're all out there, 1010XL on Facebook as well. You know, I think one thing that you think about sometimes when you're a team that nobody expects anything from, nobody expected the Marlins to do anything. They thought they were going to, you know, if this was a 162-game season, the Marlins are going to lose 100 games again. You mentioned this is the first time the Marlins have had a winning record since 2009. This is the first playoff appearance in 17 years for the Marlins. What does it feel like to say, see, I told you guys, I told you so? How does that feel?
It feels awesome. I mean, I love it because you talk to these players and they know what everyone says. You know, there was a commentator for the Phillies, I think it was, who at the beginning of the year, you know, talking about the series between the Phillies and the Marlins, basically said the Phillies have got to beat the bottom feeders. And the Marlins have adopted that phrase, bottom feeders, and they have rallied around it because they know what they're capable of. And they believe that they can win when nobody else does. And that's one thing I talked to Brian Anderson about recently, you know, just the difference in culture that he has seen since first, you know, his rookie season, which was three seasons ago now, compared to where it is now. And he said, you know, we take the field believing we can win. We're not hoping we win a ball game. We're believing that we can compete and that we have a chance with anyone. And so I think this team has done a great job with the bulletin board material and not letting what anybody else thinks about them impact the way they feel about themselves. And, you know, we see it with the Jaguars too, right? Like the Jaguars are the team in the NFL that everyone kind of gets a kick out of picking on. And the Marlins are that team in Major League Baseball that for some reason it's trendy to always make fun of or beat down or whatever it is. And I just am so happy for these guys that they get to say, we're going to the playoffs and we're going to show people what we can do. And so I'm so happy for them. I'm so proud of these guys and what they've accomplished. I'm so over the moon for Don Mattingly, who has had, you know, to manage through some really, really tough seasons. And we've had to ask him, you know, last year about 100+ losses. And you know how much he cares about these players and you know how much he wants to help them develop. And so just to see them get to where they want to be this year in being in the playoffs and knowing that Derek Jeter and Mike Hill and Bruce Sherman and this ownership group, and they've had a plan and you're starting to see it come to fruition. It's so satisfying. It's so satisfying.
I love to see it for the Marlins going to the playoffs for the first time since 2003. And they get to face off against the Chicago Cubs tomorrow afternoon at 2:08. The game's going to be on ABC, which is kind of cool. You don't see that every year for baseball. It's usually Fox and TBS and elsewhere, but ABC broadcasting Marlins and Cubs. You guys will have pre and post game. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So Fox Sports Florida will be providing pre and post game coverage for this wild card round. So if you want to get a good pregame show in, be sure to tune into Fox Sports Florida tomorrow starting at 1:30.
Jessica Blaylock, always appreciate the time from Fox Sports Florida. She was once upon a time with us at 1010XL and from Jacksonville, Terry Parker High School, I believe.
Yeah, go Braves.
Yeah, that's right.
No, wait. It's so conflicting saying that now. Go Terry Parker Braves. How
there
about
you
that?
Go. Jessica, thanks so much for your time. I mean, good luck. Good luck to the Marlins.
Thank you. Anytime, Gibby. I mean, we're just sitting here talking baseball. How great is that?
Gotta love it. Thank you.